Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another fun-filled edition of the Above Politics Show. I am still the very sexy and curvaceous Justin Case.
And I am still Martin Bain, who still loves to drink warm beer.
Ow! Ow, man! Ow! Thanks. Okay, well, as long as we're on the subject of warm beer, I just came from the ATS Mix newsroom. Evidently, there's a huge amount of fallout from the recent Scottish election, so for those of us who are confused, enlighten, please.
Golly, that's a big remit. I will do my best, Justin. There was a by-election in Glasgow East, which I think I said in the last show is the second city in Scotland, and this was regarded as a fairly safe Labour Party seat. The majority was over 13,000, and the campaign had been dogged by the Labour Party, with one of the candidates, their preferred candidate, basically pulled out halfway through the process, so they put someone else in there. He was actually a fairly credible candidate, had a lot of good feeling from the local people, but that campaign just sort of suffered from start, stop. And the upshot of it was that the electors of Glasgow East decided to smack the Labour Party by saying, nope, we're going to elect the Scottish National Party, which is currently the ruling party in the Scottish Parliament. So a fair blow for Gordon Brown, a very big turnover. I think it was the third safest seat in Scotland, and I think the Labour Party's 25th most safe seat. And what safe means is the size of the margin, the size of the majority over the person who came second. So, of course, you know what people do here, Justin. Analysts then take one result and go, all right, what this means is
I have misbehaved. I've been a bawdy little monkey.
And, you know, some people on ATS have latched onto this, that this means the Labour Party are dead. Some people have sort of quite rightly, and I agree with some of these people, preached a little bit of caution to say, OK, this is a by-election. This is an opportunity for the people of Glasgow East to make their views known on what the Labour government are doing. And typically in the UK, we do have a tradition of by-elections, which are elections between the general elections. The electorate may well punish the ruling government if they're not happy about something. It's a referendum. It's an opinion poll on how the government are doing. However, there have been some fairly big fallout over this. Gordon Brown has been under pressure. He's the Prime Minister in the UK. He has been under pressure. There have been probably fairly quiet rumblings. Is he actually doing a good job? His standing in the country is fairly low. Unfortunately, people blame the government for the economic situation. And unfortunately, the loss at Glasgow East has probably given some of those people that feel that Gordon Brown isn't the right person to lead the Labour Party and take them into the next general election the impetus to start talking more openly about this one. So it's quite interesting. It's going to make the British political scene, Justin, fairly interesting between now and the September party conference season. So some interesting times there. And a quick one on the party conference season. I did start a thread to see if any ATS members were planning to attend any of the big three political party conferences in the UK. Justin and I would certainly like to talk to you if you are planning to attend, just so that maybe you can come on the show and we can let everyone know what it's like to attend a party political conference in the UK. So this is something all we do. We'd phone you up, you'd talk for a few minutes, and then we'd talk to you after you've been to the conference, and then we'd sort of just put all that together and then present it as a show. So hopefully there is members out there in the UK who are going to go to the UK political conferences. We'd like to talk to you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Spencer Tracy. Along with Doc Hancock, I host the new BTS Mix Show. We have a lot of fun, and when we're done with our shows, we like to head over and listen to our sister shows, the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case on the Above Network LLC.
The ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous is the source for the latest information on breaking stories, conspiracy theories, and some stuff that's just plain weird. Johnny and Dave have insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their field. When I need the latest news and insight from the political arena, I log on to the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin really break it down for me. They discuss member posts, interview members about their stance on the issues, and they have access to today's noted political figures and authors. So come on over and deny boredom with me, Spencer Tracy, and my co-host, the marvelous Doc Hancock, on the BTS Mix Show. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be part of the revolution. The Above Network, LLC.
Interesting times. The summer is typically seen as sort of a quiet time, or what they call as a silly season, but I think it's slightly more serious at the moment. But talking of serious stuff, I also noticed that in Alaska you've had a senator who has been a naughty boy, it would seem, Justin.
Ah, yes, indeed. Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, the senior Republican here, he has recently been indicted on 7 counts, which means he will now go to trial because, allegedly, he did not report all of the gifts and contributions in kind, as they say, which he's received from Vico Oil Services Company over at least the last 6 years. Now, as a longtime resident of Alaska, I can tell you that the Stevens relationship with Vico goes back to at least 1976. But hey, I don't want you to take my word for any of this. A fan of the show put together a brief audio clip from local news, which will fill our listeners in on everything they need to know. So let's roll that now, and we'll talk when it's done.
Now, that 7-count indictment charging Senator Ted Stevens all center around his Girdwood home.
And as CBS 11's Corey Allen Young tells us tonight, the improvements alleged to have been paid by Vico occurred over several years and resulted in major renovations. He joins us now in the studio. Corey?
That's right, Dave and Laura. The improvements made to Senator Stevens' Girdwood house, which he refers to as the chalet, apparently spanned 6 years with a price tag of more than $250,000. The charges allege that beginning in spring 2000, Stevens and Vico CEO Bill Allen discussed whether Vico could renovate Stevens' Girdwood home. An indictment state over the next 6 years, Stevens accepted more than $250,000 in free labor and materials. Stevens, according to the indictment, never listed his receipt of the things of value on any of his yearly financial disclosure forms. The work performed by Vico employees and contractors included the installation of a new first floor with 2 bedrooms, a second-story wraparound deck, a plastic roof between the first and second floor decks, and adding a garage with a workshop. The renovation of work was alleged to have occurred through the year 2006, in which each case, Stevens knew that the work on the house was done by Vico employees and contractors. The Federal Ethics and Government Act requires all senators to file financial disclosure statements detailing their transactions during the previous calendar year, including the disclosure of gifts above a specified value and all liabilities greater than $10,000. The changes made to Senator Stevens' chalet were more than $10,000.
Stevens' colleague, fellow Senator Lisa Murkowski, released this statement today. Quote, I was shocked to learn of today's announcement. I know Ted Stevens to be an honorable, hardworking Alaskan who has served our state well for as long as we have been a state. As to the charges, we are at the beginning of the criminal process, and there is a judicial procedure in place that will be followed.
Hey, now, this is what we should do more often, Justin. Concise, compact. Now I know what this is about, because I know you sent me the link over, and I just thought, yeah, okay, so another senator's been a naughty boy. But hey, I like that. Well, I think we might have to do that more often. Serious, big story. We might just do some news clips.
Before we get to this very epic interview with Beverly Harris, who is the founder of blackboxvoting.org, I'd like to point out that a particular ATS member has caught my attention. And, oh, man, did you do it. Mr. Old School posted a thread strongly suggesting that he was going to abstain in 2008. He's called on his fellow ATS members to do the same thing, saying that if we abstain from this vile and repulsive election, that this will be the second American Revolution.
If I were registered to vote, I'd send these clowns a message by staying home on election day and dressing up like a clown.
Now, I have to say, I can't disagree with, I think, the sentiment that he's coming from here. Because, and I suspect this is the same in a lot of countries, and I'd certainly to a degree say in the UK, is, well, what? How can you influence the system? You know, in the US you have, you know, potentially two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. I know we've interviewed Wayne Root, you know, but I think you and I have to be brutal here and say his chances of becoming vice president for the Libertarian Party are rather slim. So if you're an American, if you want to influence where your country's going to be going for at least the next 4 years, you either have to vote Republican or Democrat. So I can see where he's coming from in the thought process. Does he really, hey, he or she, let's not get caught by this trap, does the poster really think that the vast majority of the US people are going to not vote? But in reality, how many people vote in a US election anyway? It's probably, what, 40% of the population?
Regrettably, just 30%.
Golly. So, in essence, 70% of those eligible to vote are already abstaining.
And I don't see that revolution coming anytime soon.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network, LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you too can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
Hello there. Oh, yes. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan, national election protection group. Basically, we work like a consumer protection agency where we take in complaints from people around the country, look into them, and also look to see if there are systemic issues that are causing problems that would mean that we might not be able to trust the results in an election in a given location or on a given type of machinery. And we've been doing this for about 4 years. We started in 2004. Our work has been featured in every major news outlet from the New York Times to every TV network, and actually was the subject of a movie called Hacking Democracy, which was aired on HBO and was nominated for an Emmy. So we've really dug in and said, let's see what we can find out about how elections are run in the U.S. We've found a number of problems. And, we're all about, at this point, trying to get as much deterrence in as possible to try to prevent some of these things from happening in November. And those that we can't, we would like to see how much we can do to catch them in the act.
Beverly, it's Martin, the other half of the Above Politics show. Good to talk to you. I've got a couple of questions. So certainly one thing that springs to mind straight away is, what sort of made you put your head above the parapet and do this? Because it would be very easy for you just to say, well, okay, yeah, I'll just carry on. So what made you set up the website and devote your time to this? What was the driver?
Well, Well, originally I had run into some very troubling information. I was just actually going to spend about 20 minutes because I was curious and I wanted to find out some information about who owned. I had learned that in 2002, it had come to my attention for the first time that our votes were being counted in secret, not in public, and they were being counted on computers that were programmed by private companies who were claiming they had the right to proprietary trade secrets. So the people who own the government were not only not allowed to see the votes be counted, we weren't allowed to even know how they're being counted. Look at the software, look at the computer system, nothing. And as I started seeing that problem, which is pretty shocking, I started wondering who owned these companies that were saying they had a right to count our votes in secret. And indeed, one of the first things I found was that a powerful Republican senator owned and had been the CEO of one of the companies that counted his own votes and many of the other votes in the U.S. That's Chuck Hagel, who has been making noise for 6 years now about running for president or trying to become vice president or whatever. Well, this guy ran for office on voting machines for a company that he had ownership in and had been the CEO that was counting votes in secret using proprietary software, and he won, according to the Washington Post, biggest upsets in the nation. That got my attention. That's the first story I broke on this issue, and I have to say, 10 days later, I got a cease and desist order. They tried to bully me out and get me to stop talking about it, and, you know, I was hooked then. Like so many other people, you see something and you never dream you're going to go this direction. But, you know, don't tell me you're going to count my vote in secret and it's none of my business. And by the way, I should shut up or you'll sue me.
What entity did you get that cease and desist order from?
From the lawyer for ESNS, which is Election Systems and Software. It's the largest voting company in the United States. There's another company I guess I made infamous. Because as I was looking into election systems and software, I was trying to find anything about how the machines work, and I happened to find a stash of files on the internet. It was not well publicized, but they were using it to trade files, and it was not protected by any password. And all of the files for another company called Diebold Election Systems were on the web. And the first file I saw there was called Rob Georgia. And it contained instructions to replace the software in the Georgia voting system shortly before the 2002 election. So, you know, I tried to hand this off. I went to the Washington Post. I called Bob Woodward from the Woodward and Bernstein, you know, group. I was like, somebody deal with this. I'm just, you know, some grandma from Seattle. I can't do this. And no one would pick up the ball at first. And I thought, here I am, I've downloaded 40,000 files from this voting machine company. Even I can figure out how to manipulate the election. In fact, it was so easy to tamper with election results using this Diebold system that, as an illustration, we taught a chimpanzee to rig a result and videotaped it. That made the New York Times. But they haven't really fixed most of the problems.
So what confidence do you have for the upcoming general election?
Well, after so much time has passed, you know, because I began working on it, other groups began working on it, there's an awful lot of very good minds who've been putting their shoulder to the wall. They have not corrected these problems. And you have to wonder, after 4 years, it's no longer that the election officials and the elections industry as a whole doesn't know about the problems. They have made choices not to correct the problems. When you see something like that, it's very disturbing, because you have to figure that there's a reason they don't want to correct these problems, and they want to leave these tamper-me machines out in the field. So it doesn't look good, because 99% of the votes in America are going to be counted in secret on computers that are controlled by government insiders and their vendors. That's a huge difference from how this country was set up, and in fact, it is a transfer of power from the people of the country over to government insiders and their vendors.
So, and certainly for me, and I can track this question over to both of you, is there anything in the U.S. Constitution that says, and I suspect, hey, I know when the Constitution was written, no one had the concept of electronic counting of votes. So are there things in the Constitution or in statutes that say your votes must be counted? Because in the U.K., typically votes are counted in a public place. There are people from all the parties who will walk round. And they will monitor the counts and they will maybe recount them. And at any stage, they can turn around and say, I think you put that vote in the wrong place.
Right. So and for that us, I is, think you know, and we don't really have it in the Constitution, but it's in the Declaration of Independence. And the women won the right to vote based on the tenets in the Declaration of Independence, not so much the Constitution, but the women's right to suffrage was won on the basis of that. And it's very simple. What it says in the Declaration of Independence is that we have an inalienable right that we are born with to be able to have the people control the instruments of government which we have created. Now, we cannot control the instruments of government we have created unless we can see the votes get counted. If people inside the government get to count them in secret, we're not in control unless they want to let us be in control.
So why
so
hasn't someone?
It is, in a sense, you know, really in violation of the principles of this country.
So why hasn't anyone gone, you know, or have people gone down the legal route on this one, Beverly, and started to try and go through, you know, local courts, state courts, and then up to the federal courts to get someone to say, sorry, you must count the votes in public?
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, we're not well-funded. Nobody is. And, you know, we're just the people. We don't have, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars for attorneys. And the elections industry does. There's a couple things there. There are some states, Virginia, South Carolina, New Hampshire, where it is unconstitutional to count the votes in secret. And there would be a very good case, I think, if a lawyer took it to win the case for counting votes in public, because it's unconstitutional in many states. So while the U.S. Constitution doesn't have it in there, state constitutions sometimes do. But the other thing that's very odd is, in the United States, citizens don't generally, legally, do not have standing to sue if they find out their vote has been stolen. Isn't that odd? We don't have standing to sue. Our vote is not considered our property, and therefore we don't have standing. And so
what is
have been several cases, and they've been thrown out based on that.
So now, can you elaborate on that? What have you been told is the official reason for that?
Oh, just that the law does not give us standing to sue. Our vote is not considered something we can sue over. Even if we have proof that our vote has been stolen, we don't have the right to sue. You know, it's like there's an issue of standing in any lawsuit where you have to prove that you know, for example, are the owner of the property, if the property was damaged. It's a problem with the law where citizens don't have standing.
Now, here in Alaska, where I live, the voters have taken it upon themselves to get the petitions out and force electronic voting machines out of our state. We just, for the most part, don't.
No, no, no.
We do.
No, no. You think so, but no.
Now
they're counted on electronic voting.
They that's true. Now they've tried and they've failed. So my question is, if we can't do this but through the lawyers, and we can't do this through petitions, what is left?
Well, I want to take people back to, you know, the civil rights era and the, you know, where we in the 60s or even back in the slavery days. Just because there's not a body of law that has been carved out saying, yes, we're going to give you what you want right now, doesn't mean we're not going to win. We should remember it was illegal for women to vote in 1900. We got the right to vote by organizing and bringing it from the people up through the system. It was illegal for a black man to walk free in the South if he was supposedly owned by a slave owner. He didn't have the right to sue. He would have lost. But you don't just say, well, there's nothing I can do. You have to build a body of public sentiment that refuses to accept the idea that our votes will be counted in secret.
Hey, that's very inspiring. Martin, you've got that list of questions over there. Would you get the ball rolling on that?
I certainly can on one of them. And one of our members, Ian McLean, gave a question. And I think you started to touch on it a little bit, Beverly, was the difference between an electronic voting machine and an automated tabulation machine.
Well, they're all counted by computers in secret, on secret software. And, you know, as long as they're not counting, your vote's being counted in secret if you can't see people counting the vote. And the vote is the ballot. It's not something that's going on inside a computer. So for a while, the elections industry here was trying to steer everybody toward, well, touchscreen votings are electronic, and if you mark a ballot and it goes through a ballot scanner, it's not electronic. Well, yes, it is. You can't see what that scanner is doing. And in fact, in the movie Hacking Democracy, we manipulated an election. The elections official was in the room, and he said, you know, if I didn't know what you guys were doing, hadn't been told in advance, I would have certified this election. And we did that with a paper ballot scanner. They're all just operating on computer programming. And so the paper ballot isn't worth the paper it's written on if you don't look at it.
So presumably you have the concept, just so that I'm sure as well, and just so you do have an electronic voting machine where you can say, I want to vote for all the elections that I can vote for today. I want to vote Democrat or Republican. But then you also maybe have another system that, if you have a paper-based system, that paper vote would be counted electronically by some kind of scanning machine that would then look and say, based on where the ballot paper is positioned, if the X is here, then it's a Democratic vote. If the X is here, it's a Republican vote.
Correct. And from the standpoint of counting votes in secret and being, you know, completely handing over your control to someone else, there's no difference between those two systems.
Okay. That certainly is a difference to the way we do things in the UK. Another question that Ian McLean has asked is, do you think there was any link between the moving of some of the primary dates, as some states' primaries are still thought to be uncounted?
Well, that was a big jockeying for position. I think it's not done yet. What happened is you had two states basically calling the shots for who the candidates were going to be for the United States of America, Iowa and New Hampshire. Iowa through a caucus and New Hampshire through a primary. I think that will change in 2012 because actually, particularly New Hampshire has shown that it has not earned the right to do that. It had a very badly run election on very suspect voting machines that were actually programmed by a company who has a convicted narcotics trafficker as one of its key people. And it programmed all the voting machines in the state of New Hampshire for the presidential primary. And they decided to go out and buy exactly the version of the machine that we hacked in the film Hacking Democracy. And they decided not to put any mitigations in. So there were, you know, the primary election thing has a lot of issues. You know, some of it is a tourist thing. I mean, who wants to go to Iowa or New Hampshire in January? They make a ton of money from tourist dollars. So it's not all politics that creates that.
Speaking of politics, you know, you're making my blood run cold with all this here. I am recalling all the way back to 2004 and then again 2006. The exit polling said one thing, but the final official vote counts said something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's very interesting. What people need to understand about exit polling is it comes in two flights. The first exit poll that comes out is what the people said to the exit poller. That's the one that counts. Then you see it switch during later in the evening. You see all of a sudden, well, the polls say so-and-so is going to win. What happens is the exit polls are then replaced with predictive numbers that are coming from the voting machines themselves. So you'll have a situation where, say, a candidate will be ahead by 8 or 10 points, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, now it's neck and neck. Well, that all of a sudden came from when the voting machine results came in. There's one organization that does most of the polling. It's called the Edison Research Group, Edison-Matovsky. And the first numbers that come out are the ones that are really interesting. Later on, they start mixing them up with voting machine results. And even so, you still see situations where it'll be completely off from what the polls were. And frankly, when we see that, that's a huge red flag that we need to look at what's going on with those vote counting machines.
But you were talking, Beverly, that your individual vote, you don't in the sort of parlance own it, so therefore you can't take any legal action if it's falsely used or it's stolen. But presumably there must be mechanisms that if there was enough evidence to suggest that either at a state level or at a federal level that a whole batch of machines were rigged deliberately to cast a vote for one candidate, there must be something that can happen here.
It's very difficult. There's many situations where that appears to be the case, but that's when they come in and say, well, it's proprietary secret. You can't see what really happened in the machine, and we can't explain the weird result, but we're not going to let you see either. And even in litigation, they don't let people see. They don't let even the plaintiffs or even the candidates get copies. Now, there's an interesting thing that happened in Alaska, where there was a very odd result from 2004, and citizens sued, and they tried to get the databases, not the program, even just the databases, which showed what the votes were. And believe it or not, the manufacturer, Diebold, said, no, we believe that the databases containing the votes are our proprietary property. Well, the citizens did win, and the state of Alaska did finally force them to release the databases containing the votes, and those databases did show indications of tampering. But then they always say, well, let's move on now. It's old news. Don't be a sore loser. Get over it. To which I say, you don't see banks doing that. If they have a bank robbery, they don't say, well, let's just shore up our security for next time and let the robber go free. But we do that in elections, and we've got to really change our mindset to say, look, there has to be consequences. If you steal an election, or if it can be shown that you have manipulated an elections database, you've got to be prosecuted. But it's political. They don't want, no politician wants to make any enemies.
You can certainly see why, can't you? If one person can just say, I just need to put a one or a zero. Here's the difference between you being elected and not elected.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and it is really that simple. In fact, the manipulations I talked to Howard Dean, a set of them on TV back in 2004, and I wouldn't even call it hacking an election. I would call it editing an election, and editing an election is actually doable by the insiders. You don't need to be a master hacker if you have access to the terminal. And so what they always try to do, this kind of bait and switch thing where they go, well, you know, it would be very difficult for somebody who's voting to hack the machine. Yeah, but what about the technician who's over there with a screwdriver? Inside access is always the biggest risk.
So maybe that's what we've been doing wrong here in Alaska. We've been using lawyers and petitions. Maybe we need screwdrivers.
What you do need? We have a toolkit that will help. We do have to, for one thing, video cameras are awesome. I can't say enough about it. We actually, our associate director at the time, Kathleen Wynn, got videotaped evidence in Ohio in 2004, and two people were sentenced to jail because of the videotape, because she caught him on tape admitting that they rigged a recount. Video is really powerful, and it is amazing how often you catch people in the act. It's like we are a nation of stupid criminals with elections right now, where they do things, they could do them elegantly with computers so that you would never know. But by and large, it's done by clumsy local yokels. And they leave a trail of breadcrumbs that anybody can follow. You just have to get in there and start asking the right questions.
Tell me more about this toolkit. I suddenly have the burning need to have one.
It's free, just like everything we do. And if you go to blackboxvoting.org, It's very obvious. It's right on the front page. And we also will be mailing it out in a pocket guide form, so the physical form, if people are out in the polling places and they just have to request it, and we'll send it to them. And basically, it gives you the top things you can do and look for to protect election 2008. It has a whole section, section 5, on the voting machines. And it gives some, it has a high-tech section for the guys who love to do computer stuff that is absolutely dynamite. If we had had that section in play in 2000, the networks would not have called the election for either Gore or Bush, as they did for both, erroneously, as we know. There's some very powerful tools that are computer tools that can be used, and there's also very brief bullet point list of signs of tampering, which you will find if you do a Freedom of Information request in many locations. In fact, we find them time and time again, and it'll be, well, you know, the machine turned on and it had some votes in it and it wouldn't give us a zero tape, and it's a glitch. Well, no, it's a sign of tampering. It's called ballot stuffing. So it gives you point blank what the signs are and the kinds of things that you can do to take action on it. And it has you kind of assess what your skills are so that you know which kinds of things fit you best. You know, not everybody's a technician, but there are people who are good communicators, as you guys are. And so some of the things communicators can do is get the word out. There are people who are good at, we call them hunter-gatherers. They love to be on the Internet finding stuff. Well, we give them a list of stuff to find because we need it by November 2008.
So that's stuff that people can find and then send in to you, which will help your cause.
Right. Right. Things like, you know, just even finding the name of the voter registration company that's used by the state. We have someone who's working on that right now. Because without knowing the name, it's difficult to craft the Freedom of Information requests for the people who are doing that side of things. So there's, like, all kinds of things that we just need to get the basic information, and it's certainly out there. It's just that we need more volunteers to go scrounge it up for us.
That's very interesting. Now, Bev, maybe you can help me out here. Earlier in the show, I was talking about an ATS member who had posted a thread in which he said that he was going to show those politicians, he was going to teach them a lesson by abstaining in 2008. Is this guy wrong, or do I owe him an apology?
Oh, he's totally wrong. I mean, well, yeah, I suppose if you just want to say, I give up and I surrender right now and I'm just going to let them take over, even if you believe they have taken over, what are you going to do, just surrender to me? You've got to go out there, cast your vote. You consider it casting evidence. And let me tell you, there's a very interesting phenomena we see where if you cast votes for a really minor candidate who's on the ballot who may not get any other votes in your precinct and zero votes show up, there has been a history of situations where that has happened and they've had to rerun the election. Think about this. If you don't believe in any candidate and you don't believe and you think the system is rigged, then go find the most oddball name on the ballot and cast one vote for it. And then watch the results. And if it comes in zero, you've got a case.
That sounds like my favoriteest kind of conspiracy, the sort of thing that would actually allow you to take action. But, again, if I go to a judge and I say that I voted for somebody and there's no vote on there's no vote on the official results, isn't it my word against theirs?
Well, it's very interesting you should bring that up because there's some battles going on in some states now. You know, on a cell phone, you can take a picture of your own vote, right? But some places are now saying, well, it's illegal to take a picture of your own vote because you might sell it. Well, actually, no. If you have not sold it, you know, it's illegal to sell a vote. It's not illegal to take a picture of your own vote. But it is... It is interesting because some of the cases where they've actually overturned or had to redo things have been where a candidate voted for himself and no vote showed up for himself. So, you know, he had a pretty good case to be made. In fact, sometimes candidates vote for themselves on video, you know, like the news comes in and watches them do it and they let them. So it's kind of iffy whether you can take evidence of what your vote was, but I would say as long as you're not selling it or telling anyone about it, you're just getting your own evidence, then why not?
Certainly, you know. And just sort of on the sort of, I know Justin touched on the conspiracy theory. We've got a couple of members asking questions regarding is there a potential attempt by Bush to manipulate or his cronies to manipulate the whole electoral system?
You know, on the national level, it is possible to do, but it's only possible, in my opinion, because there's all these different brands and each brand has its own different things and then there's different election officials. There's no such thing as a national election. It's actually run in about 5,000 different local jurisdictions. And so I think it's doable, but it is not done the way people think, where someone waves a magic wand and has a magic program that they just stick in there as some kind of virus. It's more the old-fashioned fraud, but systematized nationally. So in other words, we know where there's various pockets of corruption that people are pay to play, that are on the inside. And of course they know, because, you know, there are people who work for them in every state. They know the terrain. We will go to those folks, and we don't want to know how. Of course they don't want to know how. Nobody at the top wants to know how. They just say, here's what we need to do. We need you to deliver the county of such and such to our candidate. Do what you have to do, but deliver it. Now, even if that was wiretapped, it would never get anybody into jail because they say, well, we didn't mean rig the election. Of course they do. But it's done through networking with a patchwork of, you know, local corrupt folks. They know where they are. However, I won't say it's just the Republicans. I think that one of the reasons there has been so much resistance to really getting the kinds of reforms in place to get these, you know, the votes counted more publicly, is that both parties know that they have some dirty laundry. Neither party has entirely clean hands. They aren't sure where all the bodies are buried, and so they're stepping very carefully toward even doing any reform.
Now, I've got a question in regards to this reform issue, and it's one that's been bothering me for a long time now. This particular election cycle, it looks like the Republicans are going to get trashed. Now, what happens to the potential for voter reform if the Democrats have such huge majorities in the House and the Senate that if they wanted to engage in a little bit of conspiracy, they could basically keep those majorities for the rest of the century?
Well, first of all, I subscribe to a lot of polls, and it isn't, you know, you were seeing in the news media that it's a very lopsided race. The polls are not really showing that right now. They're showing that it's anybody's game right now. In fact, on the same day, one poll will come out and say Obama's 10 points ahead, and in the same state, another poll will come out and say McCain's 10 points ahead in the same place, you know, on the same day. So it's very iffy, and of course, a lot of those polls, some of them are paid for by the candidates, some of them are credible and some aren't. Some of them are put out there just to manage public expectations. So that's, I don't get too caught up in polls. When your question, though, is if there's a huge Democratic majority, there has been a Democratic majority, of course, since 2006 in the U.S. Congress. And we should note that they haven't passed any election reform, at least with the voting machines. No matter which party is in control, they can stay in control by manipulating the voting machines if they can control the local counties where it's run. You have to be able to either control the state. There are a few states where the programming is done by the state or by a state-appointed vendor, Georgia, Utah, New Hampshire. But there are other places where you'd really have to be able to, you know, it's all in being able to control the machines. It's a custody battle. If I've got custody of the machines in King County, you can bet my party's likely to win.
Yeah, that's a... And I suppose one of the things I was thinking, the U.S. is always held up as this great democracy. And if we take what you've said, Beverly, you know, are you starting to say that maybe the U.S. isn't that great democracy that's held up as a shining example, and the kind of democratic thought processes that people were thinking should go into Iraq and into Afghanistan, and, you know, you could say plenty of other countries around the world.
Well, in the sense that we have embodied our ideals in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, we are a role model, but we have historically had a problem living up to our own ideals. And that is really the history of the U.S., is continuing to push to actually live up to our ideals. Now, it wouldn't just be me saying that our current system of elections doesn't live up to those ideals. The Carter Foundation, which is run by former President Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter himself has said that our system of elections would not suffice and would fail the election monitoring that they do, and our system of elections is actually worse than many systems in Africa and Eastern Europe at this point. In fact, the Carter Center will not monitor U.S. elections. They don't even meet the minimum standards for them to agree to monitor them. So it's not just me saying it.
No, which sort of is sort of quite frightening, and you can sort of see why. Certainly so many members were incredibly keen for us to talk with you, and I suppose it and I sort of look to in the UK, and we sort of think, you know, there's always a race to see who can count the election, you know, who can be the first constituency in a general election day to get their vote, but all that is done by hand. So I suppose I now must look on these people with a little bit more respect, just to think they may sort of count 150, 200, maybe, you know, 200,000 votes and still get an election result potentially that everyone trusts and feel comfortable with maybe within 3 or 4 hours. So if we can do it, why can't the U.S.?
Exactly, exactly. It is a situation where, well, and by the way, we have several hundred locations in the U.S. that still hand count publicly at the polling place. And they get their elections. It was very interesting because they get their results in very quickly. Even with the large ballots and lots of ballot contests. And I noticed in the New Hampshire primary, the hand count locations actually beat the machine count locations, which I thought was actually rather suspicious, since all you have to do with the machine is push print report. I didn't really understand why it took 5 hours for these places to come up with their machine counts, whereas the hand count people had it in 2 hours. But yeah, it can be done. However, it can't be done overnight here, because we have been kind of doing these changes over the last 20, 30 years. And what we've done is we've created these huge districts. My county has 1 million voters, probably more than that, probably about 1.2 million now. And, you know, if you're going to hand count, you have to subdivide it into manageable parts.
And I would say that's exactly what we do in the UK. You might get a constituency. I mean, you know, the constituency where I live, I don't know how many polling stations there will be. And then, you know, all those boxes will then be taken potentially to one central area. So we would in the UK vote count centrally, but we would take all the ballot papers from each area would be taken with a police escort. That's how seriously we take it. And they're locked, they're sealed, they're stamped. And then they're opened, and there are hundreds, if you ever get the opportunity to watch it, but you will certainly see them, say, on, I think, probably Fox in the US, you know, there will be hundreds of people milling around the counting center, you know, making sure everything's right, and all the votes will be counted by hand.
Well, sure, about this. There's a lot of ways we could do this. In fact, in the toolkit, I even mentioned a couple of projects that even use the automated stuff, but allow the public to see. For example, Humboldt County, California. This is revolutionary. It could still be done by cooperative counties in November. They decided, you know what, we're scanning our ballots through these Diebold voting machines, but let's buy another scanner off the shelf, you know, not a vote counting scanner, just a regular old off the shelf high-speed scanner. And we'll scan all the ballots through it too and give a disc to the public. So we can see the pictures of all the ballots. Now, that's not perfect, but it didn't even cost them that much. All they had to do was buy a scanner and say, okay, now we're going to buy, you know, put them all on CD. And I think they have them on the Internet now, so people can go look and count them themselves. There's something even simpler, which would cost nothing, and that is before those ballots go anywhere, you know, because our polling places, a large polling place is 800 or 1,000 voters, you know, go to a public area, deal the ballots out like a deck of cards and let people videotape the face of each ballot if they want. So you can compare what went into the machine with what the machine says. These are simple things, but they recognize the citizen right to sovereignty that the citizens have to be able to see. To just simply say we're going to take your ballots and you're never going to see them again is just not going to suffice. But we have to get the public to understand what that's what's happening. And so that they won't accept it. You know, we do not consent, as they say.
So I'm just interested, and I hope plenty of other listeners are, because I'm going to ask the question anyway. But who gave up that right? Who allowed these electronic voting companies and machine companies to be able to dictate and say, sorry, this is all proprietary, you can't see it? Were there officials who have just, maybe not deliberately, but just over time, have just sort of allowed things to erode?
Yeah, this has actually got kicked into place starting really in the 60s with the punch card machines. And then it really got on steroids in the 80s, where we had a company called Business Records Corporation, owned by a bunch of these rich Texans, that bought up all the mom-and-pop operations. It used to be, at least with the punch cards, there was a lot of different little groups doing it here and there, you know, some little guy. And it went around and bought them all up, so that there was one company that owned a huge share of it, and then basically the whole market was consolidated into essentially two companies count about 80% of the votes in the U.S. now. And for quite a while, they were run by two brothers. You know, how strange is that? So they consolidated it, but the real thing is nobody was paying attention. I wasn't paying attention. I mean, this has been going on in a very, very bad way since the early 80s. And it's just continued to grow. And the elections manufacturing industry has really put a lot of, I mean, you know, millions of dollars into lobbying and so forth. And nobody was really paying attention. We were just told it was going to be okay. And most of us thought elections were kind of boring in terms of the actual administrative stuff.
Well, now that we know that it's not okay, as we prepare to wrap up, what are you going to do over these next few months that you would like some help with in preparation for the 2008 races?
Well, we have a whole bunch of things that we're doing right now. What I'm doing is getting diagnostics to pinpoint, you know, we don't have a lot of people. And so it's, we want to be able to pinpoint where we can expect trouble in 2008. So we can have people at least really watching those areas. And to do that, I'm doing some diagnostic work where I'm doing things like Oklahoma, state of Oklahoma, had an election on Tuesday this week. Every precinct in the state, I did a Freedom of Information request to get all kinds of control documents from them, which we will look over. And we'll be looking for certain things. Which locations are obstructive and don't want us to see? I've already come across one. You know, they don't want us to see the stuff. That's a big red flag that there's something to hide. Also, which locations do the numbers not add up? That's amazingly common. If they're not adding up their numbers correctly, it would indicate that they're either hiding something or they have very poor quality control. Again, that's a place that we want people watching. And this is the kind of thing, there's at least another six swing states that have elections in August, and we can grab their August election records and see how, you know, how they look, and start identifying the places that we really need to watch in November. I think that's one of the most important things we can do. But there again, the toolkit 2008, that is really designed with a bunch of different things that can be done, all of which will be effective. We can't get it all right by November, but I figure we just have to get it better and do enough, I guess.
And how much
work with what we have.
How much did that cost, and where do we find it again?
Toolkit's free, and it's available at blackboxvoting.org. It's available either as a download or and it's got permission in it to copy and make excerpts, do whatever people want to do with it. And we also have it in a printed booklet form that people can request, and it's free.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Beverly Harris. This has been an extremely enlightening interview, and I think I'm going to go home now and hide under my bed.
Well, no, better thing to get out there and start annoying these people and make sure that we have what we want returned to us.
Well, I can let Martin do that. He's really good at annoying people.
Very good. You see, we all have skills.
But I have to turn around and say, I don't think we have these problems in the United Kingdom.
Oh, but you know what? This company, Election Systems and Software, has been making presentations in the UK. Indeed, it has. They're trying to get your country.
Oh,
they're
no.
They're trying, but I suspect there are, you know, we are still a little bit behind the curve. I suspect more people will still be casting their vote, a paper vote, and I suspect it may take longer to get, you know, this all done. I suspect it'll never be done behind the scenes. Even if it was electronically counted, we have a tradition of I can look at them counting the vote. I have the right to do that.
Well, yeah. Well, we have your country to thank for actually getting the word out through the HBO documentary Hacking Democracy, because that was made by a British filmmakers.
There you are.
And we let you have your country.
And we let you have your country in 1776 as well.
Oh, yes. You had to get that in, didn't you?
He'll never miss a shot at that.
Yeah, that's right. We are still fighting for it. By golly, you got us there. And, you know, that's enough to inspire me to put away the notion of hiding under my bed. I'm going to go get your toolkit, and I'm going to see what I can do to get involved in this fight myself.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
I've got to say, I'm blown away with that one. I got extremely interesting, and I just didn't realize that people felt that strongly about electronic voting in the States. And I didn't realize that there's a perception that there may be something not quite right with some of your elections, Justin. It didn't cross my mind, really.
Well, you know, based on what she said, if Amy Winehouse ends up as your next prime minister, I'm going to start worrying about you guys, too.
I'm not sure whether that would actually be that bad. I gotta think, you know, we could do a lot worse than what we've got today. We could certainly do a lot better.
Man, I'm not sure I'm gonna be able to sleep tonight. This is incredible, because every time I've gone into my polling place in the last several election cycles, I have walked right past that electronic voting machine and gone for the paper ballot. And honestly, the last time I was in there, they didn't even have the darn thing on. There was a dust cover on it. It was pushed over into the corner. Obviously, nobody wanted to have anything to do with it. And, you know, I felt rather smug filling out my paper ballot, but now I don't feel quite so secure anymore.
So I think, you know, you got to do what Beverly suggested. You got to stick your head above the parapet and say, nope, I want to know more about this. I want to find out what's happening to my vote. So I think, yeah, and I think that's somewhat of the things we've always tried to say is, you know, if these things do make you lie awake at night, and we really hope they don't, but, you know, if they do, maybe that's a signal for you that maybe you need to get up and do something about it.
Yeah, now speaking of doing things, I'm sure that everybody's wondering, where's the new trivia challenge? No, we haven't forgotten. I was just yanking your chain. I was just waiting until after we finished the interview. Okay, and now this week, it's my turn to stump you all. So here we go. My question is, name three individually famous mice.
Three individually famous mice.
It's not on money, and it's not something you can Google easily.
Golly, I can probably think of one or two. Three might create a little bit of thought process for me, but clearly I'm not allowed to answer.
Well, besides, what would you do with another 500 applause points anyway? I mean, really?
I'm not sure if you're allowed to sell them. I suspect management might.
Ow! See, now, okay, there you go. Now you know why you're not allowed to have them. Gee whiz.
Never mind. Hey.
Okay.
You've got Fridays.
All right, then. On that larcenous note, we're done for the week. Thanks very much for listening. I am Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics Show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.